9. Seduction. Charcoal. There was no further talk of gods or insane plots after dinner. I was too stunned to think of further questions, and even if I had asked, Saruman made it clear she would answer no more. "I think we've spoken enough for tonight," she said. And then she'd laughed a rich, perfectly measured laugh. "You're looking a bit pale, my dear." So they'd brought me back to my room, where Jaunt had left me night clothes and spiced wine to drink before my evening prayers, in the Morona custom. Perhaps she'd looked it up in a book. Suspecting observation, I drank a glass and then prayed for the first time in several years, but not to Bridey Tempest. Instead, I tried to fix my thoughts on Madding. He had told me that gods could hear the prayers of their devotees, regardless of distance or circumstance, if only they prayed hard enough. I was not precisely a devotee of Madding's, but I hoped desperation would make up for it. "I know where you are," I whispered in my mind, since there might be listeners in the room. "I don't know how to get you out yet, but I'm working on it. Can you hear me?" But though I repeated my plea and waited on my knees for nearly an hour, there was no answer. I knew Madding was in that dark, sensationless place, the empty. But I wasn't sure where that was. For all I knew, only the lights could open and close the way to it. Or perhaps only their Scrivener-trained Nypri could. Figuring that out would be my next task. The next morning, I awoke at dawn, having slept fitfully on my cot. Already there was activity in the house. I could hear it through the door, people walking, brooms sweeping, casual chatter. I should have guessed that an organization of Etempans would start their day well before sunrise. More distantly, echoing through the corridors, I heard singing, the light's wordless hymn, which was far more soothing and uplifting than the lights themselves had turned out to be. Perhaps there was some sort of morning ceremony taking place. If that was the case, then it would be only a matter of time before they came for me. To quell the unease, I dressed in the clothes they'd given me and waited. Not long afterward, the lock on my room's door opened and someone came in. "Jaunt?" I asked.
"No, it's Hado again," he said.
My belly tightened, but I think I managed not to show my unease. There was something about this man that made me very uncomfortable. It was more than his participation in my kidnapping and forced assimilation into a cult, more than his veiled threat the night before. Sometimes I even thought I could see him, like a darker shadow etched against my vision. Mostly it was just the constant feeling, impossible to prove, that the face he showed me was just a veil, and behind it he was laughing at me.
"Sorry to disappoint you."
He had caught my unease, and predictably it seemed to amuse him.
"Jaunt has cleaning duty in the mornings, something you'll become familiar with too, eventually."
"Eventually?"
"It's traditional for a new initiate to be put on a work crew. But we're still trying to figure out a placement that can accommodate your unique needs."
I could not help bristling. "You mean that I'm blind? I can clean just fine, especially if you give me a walking stick." Mine, to my lament, had been left behind on the street outside Madding's house. I missed it like an old friend.
"No, Erushov. I mean the fact that you'll escape first chance you get."
I flinched, and he chuckled softly.
"We don't usually put guards on the work crews, but until we're certain of your commitment to our way, well, it would be foolish to leave you unsupervised."
I drew in a deep breath, let it out. "I'm surprised you have no procedures for handling recruits like me, if kidnapping and coercion are your usual practice. Believe it or not, most of our initiates are volunteers." He moved past me, inspecting the room. I heard him pick up a candle holder from one of the wall sconces, perhaps noting that I'd blown out the candle early. I did not exactly need the light, and I never liked the idea of dying in my sleep from a fire. He continued, "We've done quite well at recruiting among certain groups. In particular, devout Etempan laity who are disaffected with the Order's recent changes. I imagine we'll do well in Nimero when we start setting up a branch there."
"Even in Nimero, Master Hado, there are those who feel no need to worship Etempus in the same way as everyone else, No one forces them to do what they don't want to.
Untrue, he replied, which made me frown. Before 10 years ago, every mortal in the 100,000 kingdoms worshipped Etempus in the same way. Weekly offerings and services at a white hall, monthly hours of service, lessons for children from 3 years to 15. Every holy day all over the world, the same rituals were enacted and the same prayers chanted. Those who dissented?
He paused and turned to me, still radiating that cool amusement that I so hated about him.
Well, you tell me what happened to them, lady, if there were so many dissenters in your land.
I said nothing in consternation, because it was a pointed dig at me. A Morona who had fled Nimero first chance. Worse, he was right. My own father had loathed the White Halls, and the rituals, and the rigid adherence to tradition. Long ago, he told me the Morona had had their own customs for worshipping Bright Etempus, special poetic forms, and a holy book, and priests who had been warrior historians, not overseers. We'd even had our own language back then. All that changed when the era Mary came to power.